Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to Talking Transfers, a brand new show from the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by 90 Min's transfer correspondent, Graham Bailey, and 90 Min's top cat, Toby Cudworth. Toby, how are you doing today?
All good, thank you, mate. All good. Looking forward to Europa League second leg, West Ham Frankfurt this week, where we can turn it around.
Toby is buzzing. How are you doing, Graham?
Yeah, I'm doing great as well. Probably not looking forward to the Rangers second leg just as much. I had to sit through the first leg, which was okay, actually. But in terms of transfers, desperately disappointed in some of those Leipzig players, especially Nkunku. Really disappointed.
He missed a big chance, didn't he? He only caught it out of the corner of my eye.
I think he did, yeah. He took it past the keeper and put it over. But the overall game, yeah, to be fair, they were really poor. Apart from Konrad Lehmer, I think the midfielder, he was very good. So at least I spotted one talented player.
He is one for, I want to put this nicely, the stats nerds. I think he measures highly with a bunch of midfield statistics. He's quite high up in the list. And there are people, as a result, saying that X big club should buy this player, Konrad Lehmer. He'll probably be linked to a bunch of clubs over the summer. So we've got nothing on him today, but keep an eye out for his name.
I think that's already started, Florn, to be honest. I think he's been linked with about three or four clubs.
Yeah, I've seen United and Tottenham. I did look up for him. Right? He was one who went past, but he did play very well in that game. But you could argue it was against Rangers, and Rangers were the better team, actually.
What's the tip then for the Europa? We already know one half of the Champions League draw, or the Champions League final, and then Real Madrid v City is anyone's guess at the moment. But what's the Europa League final tip? So you, a West Ham, going to march to Seville, Toby?
We are better away from home. We're better equipped away from home. And actually, the same with Frankfurt. They haven't got a great home record. So that tie is still open. They were better than us in the first leg, clearly. But we can still turn it around. And we've crucially got some players back fit, which I think could be key.
Yes, indeed. We'll hope for an all-British final. Should be an interesting one. And just a reminder, this is a brand new weekly show where we'll dig into the latest on the futures of the biggest names in world football, be it players or managers. And on today's edition, we've got a bumper list for you. We've got a chat on Aurelien Tchouaméni, some interest from Real Madrid and Liverpool, Sadio Mane talk over a new deal, which you can see on 90min.com in the next few days, if not already, depending on when you listen to this. We've got talk on Rhys James, Kylian Mbappe, Adam Hložek, linked with West Ham. And then obviously we've got to do a Man United section towards the end. Jesse Lingard, Marcus Rashford, Frankie de Jong, potentially. And then we'll wrap up with how Pep might react to Jurgen Klopp's new deal at Liverpool. Just a reminder as well, you can subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and follow us on Twitter too, @_ScottSaunders for me, @GrahamBailey for Graham, and @Toby_Cudworth for 90 Min's top cat. But let's get back to Monaco midfielder Aurelien Tchouaméni, who is probably one of the biggest names set to move this summer. Mind you, there's going to be a lot of them on there, but he's one of the most promising midfield prospects in European football. France international has really broken through at Monaco over the last 18 months or so, perhaps longer. Chelsea had an opportunity to sign him last summer. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second. But Graham, Real Madrid and Liverpool are at the head of the queue. Is that the right way to put it?
I would say more they've firmly joined the chase for him. They both have been watching him a lot in the last 6 months because this guy really has kicked on. You know, Chelsea were looking at him massively last summer. They thought about paying 40 million for him, but backed away slightly. They thought about buying him, doing a loan back with Monaco. And now looking back, they will regret not doing that because he is one of the midfielders in Europe and he's top of Chelsea's list. Chelsea love this guy. They would rather sign him, from what we understand, than Declan Rice. Not because he's better, but he's just a slightly different player.
And cheaper.
Because we believe 60 million, around 60 million euros would get this done. Now, in terms of Real Madrid, they're looking at it and they don't want to pay for him. They like him, he's on the list, but they're thinking, we think we class him as like a Camavinga type player. And if we remember, they paid 40 million euros for Camavinga, but you know, he's a bit more advanced, I would say, Tchouaméni than Camavinga. They are different players, slightly different styles. You know, Tchouaméni's a bit more attacking, I would say, Camavinga a bit more defensive, but I haven't seen too much of either, actually, in the last 6 months. But I think they've got legs, haven't they? They really have. But Chelsea like him a lot, but a lot's going to come down to Chelsea's ownership issues. You know, it seems to be a new story every day about ownership. We're not going to get into detail here. We're not going to bore everyone to death on what the latest is on that. But we've got a few on that. I mean, everyone, a few updates coming about Jim Ratcliffe, etc. But in terms of this player, yeah, he's great. And Liverpool are in for him as well. Not the bid hasn't been made by Liverpool. They are looking... I was speaking to a few people at Liverpool, covered the Liverpool-Newcastle game at the weekend, and he's very much on their list. But Liverpool have got a lot of midfielders at the moment. We were discussing, weren't we, Toby, about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain isn't even making the bench. He's not in the squad. Minamino is not in the squad. So Liverpool have some players to move out, we believe, before they would bring someone like Tchouaméni in. Doesn't mean they won't, but I suspect, from what I'm hearing, I would still... almost make Chelsea favourites, but don't rule out Real Madrid here, because Real Madrid like this guy a lot. They really do think he's probably one of the... They think he's up there with Jude Bellingham, Real Madrid, I'm told.
Toby, can I just ask, because obviously we've reported extensively on Chelsea's interest in Tchouaméni over the last few months, but obviously there's the ownership uncertainty hanging over them at the moment, but with that has also come... inability to renew contracts, which means Antonio Rudiger will walk away, likely to Real Madrid. Christensen, likely to Barcelona. Thiago Silva's going to stay. But, you know, we've seen this season that they don't really have too much depth underneath that, especially when they play three centre halves. Midfield has been a position that they've needed to strengthen, but with somebody like Romelu Lukaku, who was bought last summer for 100 million-ish, now being on the bench all the time, that's another player that they've got to get out, and they'll probably need to replace him. There's fans are criticising, Chelsea fans, that is, criticising, they criticise Marcus Alonso for his levels of performance. Do they need an alternative to him instead of Ben Chilwell? Because Ben Chilwell's been out for a while. And there's also big criticism on the players around the central striker as well, apart from Kai Havertz and Mason Mount, really. So are we? Do you, from your perspective, think that that could hold them back, the fact that other positions might take priority over central midfield?
It's tricky, isn't it? 9 months ago, you wouldn't have thought Chelsea would be in this position where they're in a bit of a quandary of where do they want to strengthen. They probably had one or two weak areas, or they felt they had one or two weak areas that they would maybe go and look to strengthen. Tchouaméni was somebody they really should have signed last summer for all intents and purposes, and they didn't. He's got better in that time, and there's no doubt in my mind that he would improve Chelsea's midfield greatly. And if anything, we've seen recently that N'Golo Kante is possibly declining a little bit as well. Still very, very high level, but maybe his legs are giving way a little bit. He's, what, 31 years old now? Jorginho's not getting regular game time all the time. He's had a few injury problems. He's also dipped a little bit. But Chelsea desperately need central defenders, or they're going to need central defenders. And they've probably got four or five positions that they're now thinking, Christ, we need to sign somebody. So Tchouaméni was the absolute need for them last summer. He might not be the number one priority right now. But having said that, I still think Chelsea need him more than, say, Real Madrid or Liverpool at the moment. Liverpool's midfield is also knocking on a bit in terms of age when you look at Henderson and James Milner. They could be looking for one or two replacements in the coming years, but they don't need it right now. Real Madrid's eyes are locked on Kylian Mbappe and very little else, even though that's not going to cost them anything in terms of transfer fee. It will cost them an awful lot in terms of wages and other top-up fees. So Chelsea's an interesting one, but I do feel that he would best be served going to Stamford Bridge. And as Graham says, I think he is the preferred option to Declan Rice, purely because he's very, very good going forward, but he can also play the anchor role so well. And that's something Chelsea need a bit more supporting.
Graham, similar question to you there. How much surgery elsewhere outside of the midfield do Chelsea need to perform once the ownership is sorted out?
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, we know that Tuchel isn't happy with the forward department. It's one reason why I think they might still look at the midfield, because Mason Mount intrinsically is a better centre midfielder, but he's going to be playing that forward role because, you know, the likes of Ziyech, Pulisic, Hudson-Odoi, they're just not performing for him. And Mount is, so Mount's going to end up playing there for the foreseeable future. And then with Conor Gallagher coming back, that'll mean even less room for Mount in there. So, yeah, they do need an awful lot in defence as well. We know that Koundé is probably coming in, what we're told. He wants to go. They're going to wait for him, even if Chelsea's ownership thing runs on. They're going to be him. Chelsea are very impressed by him. He is not accepting advances from elsewhere, we're being told, so we think he'll go. But they need, if else, you know, they were looking at Koundé, if you remember, Chelsea were looking at Koundé when they saw Kurt Zouma. And that was when they thought they were keeping Rudiger and Christensen, and then they've lost. So that's three centre halves they've lost, and possibly only one coming in. Now Silva's been doing well, so part of the reason they're playing back three is because he's there, and he can't stick it in a back four, I don't think. But another player, Levi Colwill at Huddersfield, who you'll see in the playoffs, I think he's back from injury now. He's a spectacular player, left-footed centre half at Chelsea. Don't be surprised if he comes straight back in to the mix. And I know they've got Chalobah, but this guy is better than Chalobah. So they may only need one more. If they think they've got Koundé, Colwill comes back, Silva. They may only need one more.
It looks to me, G, that they're papering over the cracks at Chelsea a little bit. They play three at the back to mask some of the problems that they've got.
Yeah, totally, Toby. I think the Silva thing, Silva's getting an awful lot of plaudits from some of our colleagues on 90 Minutes especially. But when I watch Chelsea, Rudiger is everywhere. He is from side to side. People... I think Chelsea fans are a bit down because now he's going, but he has had such a great season. He's up, he is everywhere, that boy. And I think Thiago's been claiming some of his plaudits, as it were. And I think we may see suddenly, oh, Silva's not playing as well as he was last year. Oh, yeah, really, because Rudiger's at Real.
This is where bringing like someone like Tchouaméni into midfield, though, could help solidify what's in front of that defence. Mm. I think Thomas Tuchel ideally would want to play a back four. You don't see big teams playing three central defenders unless they absolutely had to.
Which is why the Tchouaméni thing might make sense, because even though Jorginho and Kante are there, the legs are going a little bit. And Jorginho, you know, with the interest we've seen from Sarri at Lazio and in Italy, it wouldn't be a major surprise, would it, if we saw Jorginho go back to Serie A this summer, which would then, if he did go, that would pay for Tchouaméni to a certain degree.
Yeah, there's contracts in 2023 to address as well. There's a number of players who Chelsea have to tie down. Obviously, they will be losing some players on free transfers this summer as well. I did actually intend to make this a Liverpool heavy section, but it seems like Chelsea have just taken over a little bit. And before we cycle back to Liverpool, we now may as well just talk about Reece James too. Graham, it was reported on nightmen.com in the last few days that despite interest from Real Madrid, which I'm sure people have seen, Chelsea are hoping to tie down Reece James to a new deal.
Yeah, they're going to reward him. You know, Reece James is England's first choice right back. He's one of the best right backs in the world. He's the right-hand side version of Ashley Cole for me. He gives everything going forward, but he can also defend. The miraculous of modern football, a fullback who can defend.
Graham, Trent or Reece James?
Reece James, 100%.
Me too.
And that's not even a conversation Gareth's having. We've seen that. Trent only just made his Euro squad. Reece James is playing there. Well, I would personally, I'd play Trent on the left. I think he could play out Philip Lahm role. He is light years ahead of anything we've got on the left. Chilwell maybe, with the exception of him, but I still think Trent's better than Chilwell. I would play Trent on the left. I really would.
Gareth Southgate, listen up.
Put Trent in like a quarterback position next to Declan Rice. Reece James can play right back. Trent tucked in kind of the right side of a two-man defensive midfield. He's spraying passes all over the shop. Declan Rice is running the show everywhere else. Happy days.
Still time to potentially experiment with the... There's an international break coming up at the end of the season, at the end of the domestic season, the club season, which I think there's as many as four games.
A lot of work to do for that English defence, but I think, Gareth, there's probably only three or four spaces in that squad available anyway. I think the likes of Conor Gallagher and Joe Gomez, who's been playing well, I think there's only three or four spaces to change from the Euro squad. I don't think there's many spots available in that Gareth Southgate World Cup squad.
There will be more chat on World Cup and that kind of thing in the next weeks and months. I'm sure we'll do a little bit around the international break as well, which
comes. Does that depend if Wales win, Scott, though? We're talking see. World Cup. If Wales get there, we're talking World Cup if Wales get there.
Yes, that will have a big influence on whether I go to the World Cup and whether we talk about the World Cup, because this is a transfer show, obviously. We better get back to it anyway. I think Toby, Trent or Reece James to you?
For the right back role, Reece James, because I think he offers absolutely everything. And just on Chelsea as well, giving him a new contract being the priority is 100% the right thing.
I didn't answer Scott's question. Yeah, 100%. but because it's not even a conversation. Chelsea have said, as soon as that takeover is done, he's getting the contract that his new thing, that his new status in the footballing world deserves. He's not looking to leave. He loves it there. You know, and this Mason Mount stuff with his links, he'll get a new contract pretty soon as well. Chelsea, whoever the new owner is, some of their first jobs, yeah, it may be to get rid of Lukaku, but second to that will be tying down James Mount, probably Chilwell as well.
Yes, indeed. Let's cycle back to Liverpool and keep on the tone of new deals. Sadio Mane, Mo Salah out of contract in a year's time, but Jurgen Klopp has just signed an extension to his Liverpool deal, keeping him there for another 4 years. As a United fan, awful news. But yes, he's done an excellent job at Liverpool, and now attention should likely turn to keeping the players there. We won't talk Mo Salah today, but Sadio Mane in line for a new deal, but perhaps will not get exactly what he wants, Graham.
Yeah, it's a strange one, this one. His people have been told you will get an offer. It won't be till the summer. We know from late last year that he was wanting around the £300,000 mark, which would have made him the highest paid player at the club. Considering Virgil van Dijk is currently the highest paid, he's on around 230. Incrementally, it'll go up to about 250 this season coming. But he only signed that in August last year, van Dijk. So I think Liverpool are saying, especially Mane, saying, well, why should you get more than Van Dijk, who only signed his deal recently? Let's take a club-friendly deal. I think Mane is the sort of player who probably would take a club-friendly deal. But he has to be... He is not certain of his future at the club. No, we've said this before with Salah. The Liverpool's current three, if we went to the Champions League final, if we fast-forwarded, if Jurgen Klopp named Jota and Diaz in that final, it wouldn't surprise us at all. And that is such to the extent now where... think. 2 years ago, Firmino, Mane and Salah, who would have thought would have even contemplated moving on from M3? And he's already replaced two of them. So I'm not convinced that... I don't think both of them will sign. I think Mane probably will, because he's the most likely to take the club-friendly deal. So I think Mane might, but I think there's talking to be done, because I don't think he's in a that strong a negotiating position. Liverpool will, I think, make it take it or leave it offer to him. And if he doesn't sign, they'll move on and look elsewhere.
Yes, indeed. We'll move on briefly now, because we've been waffling on for a little while on topic one, or there's been a few in that. But well, let's move on to... I did want to talk about Real Madrid and Kylian Mbappe, their pursuit of him, which just seems like it's never ending at the moment. But Kylian Mbappe has only, now we're in May, less than two months left of his current contract with Paris Saint-Germain. There's been noises out of PSG to suggest that he will extend. But the latest from the Madrid camp, as it has been for a long time, Graham, is that they're confident they've got him.
Yeah, I've been talking to a few people the last few days close to Madrid. And as they have been probably since January, Scott, they're very cool and calm. They're not coming out and saying it. You do notice, don't you? They're not really coming out and saying anything, Madrid. A little bit from the local Madrid papers and stuff. But Mbappe, he's just playing a straight bat, isn't he? He's not upsetting either camp. He's not really upsetting either camp. And he's been so professional the way he's gone about it. If you were Florentino Perez and you're getting this lad, You'd be so excited about the way he handles himself, wouldn't you? About the way he's dealt with it. I know a lot of the Haaland stuff isn't his fault and all these other players you're going after, but if you were Perez, you're going after the greatest player in the world and he's not even mouthing off or doing, you'd be so delighted with what you're getting. But yeah, I think we'll do an update on this with the next couple of days, and you'll be able to read it on site as you're listening to this. But yeah, we understand from Real, they are very, very confident they are getting Mbappe.
And they have reason to be. They've been quite confident with Rudiger for a little while now. And looks like they'll be snapping him up on a free transfer. Kylian Mbappe to follow. You would expect, it's been going that way. We've been reporting this for about 2-3 years, Graham. But this is what Real Madrid's plan has been.
Yeah, we've kept on the street, on this road for quite a while. They were going for the three musketeers, weren't they? They always wanted the first plan was to get Kante, Pogba and Mbappe. The Kante switched to Camavinga, which they got last summer. They're getting Mbappe. Pogba, has that switched to Tchouameni? Quite possibly. But Pogba could still be an option as well. You know, I wouldn't necessarily rule Pogba out, but we'll touch on him again in the coming weeks, no doubt. But yeah, it's been the plan all along. I just love the way Perez works. You know, he's taken a lot of, he's very close to Sir Alex Ferguson, and the way this planning's gone. Real Madrid have been so professional. They've been the absolute opposite of the shambles that's been Barcelona recently. And I think Real Madrid fans can be so happy with the way that club's being run at the moment.
Yeah, they used to go for the Galactico version of, you know, spending lots of money on the hottest prospect on the market or something like that. But they've gone a couple of summers without really spending any money, Toby. In order to get their house in order, and they've still managed to retain levels of success. They've just won, obviously, La Liga in the last few days. Great picture of Carlo Ancelotti with a cigar, by the way. I'm sure everyone's caught that. And they're in a Champions League semi-final against Manchester City. We're recording this well ahead of that game. But, you know, are we seeing Real Madrid back as a superpower, Toby?
I think so. And I think a lot of that has to do with Carlo Ancelotti, who is grossly underappreciated, I think, throughout his managerial career for what he's achieved in so many different leagues, as well as on the European stage. He's a winner. And when he went to Everton, there was this weird perception that immediately Everton needed to be a top six or a top four team because they'd hired Carlo Ancelotti, and that he could, and because they weren't doing that, they were still doing well, but because they weren't at that level, that he was some kind of failure, which is utterly bizarre because he's now obviously gone to Real Madrid and he's taken them back to where they belong with a helping hand from Barcelona, who have been pretty abject for the best part of 12 months, 18 months, if not longer. But he's got the best out of players as well. The progress from Vinicius this season is unbelievable compared to last year. Karim Benzema somehow has taken his game to a whole new level. And these are world-class players in their own right. But having Carlo Ancelotti at the helm, somebody who's been there, seen it all, done it all, won it all, has just kind of knitted that group together. And there's going to be some turnover. They're going to get rid of some players this summer that they don't need or that are out of contract. Gareth Bale's going to be a huge amount of money off the wage bill.
I can't believe it. It's finally coming to an end.
Yeah, end of an era. And how long's Eden Hazard got on that horrible contract he signed at Real?
Graham, say at least another two.
Yeah, at least another two. So he's, you know, these big contracts. This is and someone like Eden Hazard, Aubameyang, Ozil, the FSG at Liverpool, coming back to him for a second, will be taking a long look at these sort of deals. When you're handing out £400,000, £500,000, £600,000 in Hazard's case a week, you have to be certain you're going to get the full value out of the length of this contract. Now, Mo Salah, I don't doubt, will be a world-class player in 3 years, but can we guarantee it? So you can see from FSG's point of view, not even playing devil's advocate, I can see from their point of view saying, should we give this guy a 4-year contract on £500,000 a week, or should we give Jurgen Klopp £60 million to find a new one? He was going to get paid £100,000 or £150,000 a week.
It's looked in the last few weeks with Liverpool that it doesn't seem like, you know, taking Salah out of that team a few weeks ago or a few months ago would have been catastrophic, essentially, because he scored so many goals and contributed so much to them that you just couldn't really see them succeeding without him. But now it's like, as you mentioned earlier, they've got like five players. And if he named Diaz and Jota in a front three in the Champions League final, and you put Mane on the right or Mane.
Wouldn't surprise us, would it? And that could happen. But as well, the other guy who they've got coming at Chelsea, Liverpool, sorry about quickly, Fabio Carvalho. I've seen him a lot more than you have, guys, in the Championship, unfortunately. But he is such a spectacular player. He is not coming there as a project. He's coming there to compete for first team.
I watched him last night, Graham. I saw Fulham tear Luton apart 7-0. Three players stood out like a sore thumb. Harry Wilson was brilliant, and I think he got three assists. Aleksandar Mitrovic, who you've been banging the drum for ages, saying how good he is, and me and Scott have kind of giggled and said, yeah, Championship. He was great, and he was linking up the play superbly and just bullying defenders, just having that physicality and just running the show. And then Fabio Carvalho, who didn't look like a teenager whatsoever. He looked like a seasoned pro who had been doing it for years. And it just seems to come so naturally for him. I haven't watched too much of him, but what he did do yesterday looked effortless.
He's spectacular. He's not costing much money, but that's because everyone's thinking, oh, why Liverpool getting him for a £5-7 million deal in total? He's out of contract. And yeah. So as they stole Harvey Elliott away from Fulham, they're doing the same. Now, Fulham are pretty sick of the sight of Liverpool at the moment with those two players. But Carvalho, and remember, he's actually as well, I understand, he hasn't chosen between Portugal and England yet. He could go to the World Cup with one of those teams, quite conceivably.
Be interesting to see. He is a massively highly rated player. And just one other thing, Graham. Aleksandar Mitrovic, record breaker?
Yes, obviously. We just poo-poo that. He isn't a record breaker. Second tier. We know George Campbell of Middlesbrough fame in the 1920s did it. He scored 59 in one season. And it was over 42 games. And he refused penalties. And my granddad told me stories of George Campbell. Because the following year, when he scored 59, he was the top scorer in English football history in one season. The following year, Dixie Dean broke it to 60 goals by one. So that's why we don't really know about George Campbell. I know you two guys don't really know him. He
started in 1992, Graham.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it did for me to a certain degree. But yeah, George Campbell, Middlesbrough. Hopefully I'm going to do an article at some point this week when I get a chance to really jump home. Because his main claim to fame is his England goal scoring record, where he scored 18 goals in 9 appearances for England.
Next thing, you'll be telling us that they weren't playing on picture perfect pitches and really light footballs that move and wobble in the air.
He's no Jared Bowen, Toby, but yeah, I think he was decent in his own right.
Fantastic segue, Graham. I actually wanted to go to the West Ham camp next. So, Toby, we've spoken about Europa League. It looks as though West Ham might end up coming seventh in the Premier League, barring. Well, Man United are still there to collapse, of course. But, you know, performances and results have kind of ground to a little bit of a halt, although it's not over yet in the Europa League. Is it over for West Ham's hopes of signing Adam Hložek?
Well, potentially. So it's a story that's going to come out on 90min.com over the next day or so, or it might already be out, depending on when you listen to this podcast. But Daniel Kretinsky invested in West Ham at the back end of last year. He took just under a 30% stakeholding in the club. And that's with a view to taking over at some point in the future. Could be 2023 when the stadium lease terms change, or it could be a bit after that. But as well as the money that's coming into the club are his close links with Prague, and specifically Adam Hložek, who is one of the Czech Republic, if not the Czech Republic's best prospect. A teenage forward who's incredibly powerful. We saw a little bit of him at Euro 2020, has an exceptionally bright future, and a lot of big European clubs are tracking him. And that's been common knowledge for the best part of a year. And West Ham have been interested in him prior to Kretinsky's arrival. And it was hoped that him coming in would actually help facilitate a deal. But from what we've learned, David Moyes has been offered the chance to take Adam Hložek on loan to West Ham next season. It's an offer that's come specifically from Daniel Kretinsky. It's not available to any other club. It's part of the close relationship that West Ham have through Kretinsky. And there's an unwillingness at this stage for West Ham to commit to a deal. They're just holding fire and wanting to assess their options. So doing that doesn't mean that they've lost Hložek, but it certainly opens the door to the likes of Borussia Dortmund and a couple of other big European clubs who are taking a look at him. And we've already touched on West Ham's form dwindling a little bit. This back end of the season. They need bodies. They need players. And Hlošek is a young player with plenty to learn, but he's an unbelievable talent, isn't he, Graham?
Yeah, he really is one of the next big things. He's suffered a bit with injuries, hasn't he, Toby, in the last few months? And also, he plays a lot on the left as well, doesn't he, cutting in? He would fit the system beautifully. I think he'd suit the English game. And we know West Ham's relationship with Czech players. Obviously, David Moyes' relationship with Czech players is coming into question, given Thomas Suchek's questionable future at the club, which has been... Obviously, we broke that story, didn't we, Toby, a few weeks ago? But now everyone's latching onto that, and it's been taken very seriously. And the West Ham fans are very fearful. You could very well have the heart of your team ripped out here, Toby. Although exciting times, worrying times ahead, Toby.
It is, and the Soucek thing is bizarre. I've seen a lot of supporters suggesting that if Thomas Soucek were to go, that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. And it boggles my mind, because although individually he's not been as good as last year, I tweeted that he's played 127 games for club and country since January 2020, when he first came to West Ham. That's nuts. That's a ridiculous amount of football. Over four games per month continuously for just over 2 years. And he hasn't been great with his passing, and he's looked tired and leggy, but you would, wouldn't you, when you're playing that much football? And
he was at Euros, wasn't he? So he didn't have much time off. He was captain of Czech, wasn't he? So he had a long Euros as well. Yeah. And as you say, he virtually plays all the minutes for you. It's not a surprise that he's covered, him and Declan Rice cover so many. I don't know what the stats are. I'd imagine them two are in the... There must be in the top 10% of midfielders coverage-wise in the Premier League. Absolutely.
It's a positional thing as well with Soucek. He may not be cutting the ball out, or he may not be... His pass accuracy might not be down, but he's in the right position, and he allows Declan Rice to be in the right position, and he allows Declan Rice to flourish, both from a defensive point of view, but also a playmaking point of view. He makes those driving runs at times, and Thomas Soucek holds position, or vice versa. Rice drops deep and Soucek ventures forward a bit. He's crucial to this West Ham team, and he cannot be allowed to go, or you would have thought he cannot be allowed to go, because he's played so much football. There's obviously no one else at the club to replace him. Noble's retiring. Alex Kral is not good enough. More bodies have got to come in. Soucek's got to stay, and West Ham do need to start gambling on players. I know David Moyes wants to get the right profile in, but is he in a position to turn his nose up at talents like Hlošek when it's offered to him? I don't think he is.
Does strike me as a very Borussia Dortmund-style signing, but I did just want to round up on West Ham here. I guess this is mainly to... That's to both of you, really, but more of an opinion than anything else, really. Do West Ham need to bite the bullet here and kind of... do they need to shoot higher in terms of the wages that they pay to players? Do they need to just think, all right, looking at this now, are they going to take a decision to be a selling club and cash in and then replace players with the money that they get on a similar kind of structure? Or are they just going to have to shoot higher a little bit and just take the hit?
This is a transitional thing for West Ham in terms of identity. They haven't been able to think like a top six or a top eight club, because they've been so yo-yo over the past few years. There was one good season under Slaven Bilic after we'd been promoted the last time round. But outside of that, it's kind of been scraping top 10 finishes, and it's very hard to commit financially when you don't know how you're going to perform. And West Ham have spent badly in the past, really badly. But at the same time, you can't be left behind. And the progress that's been made over the last 2 years means that the immediate focus probably needs to be rewarding the likes of Jarrod Bowen with new contracts and then assessing from there. But there can't be a reluctance to just pigeonhole going after a certain profile of player and not pulling the trigger on anybody. Every club takes one or two risks in the transfer window, minus Liverpool, who seem to get it right with everybody that they sign. But yeah, new players probably needs to take a back seat in terms of get two or three people nailed down to a new deal and then build from there. But they can't have the selling club mentality. Otherwise, it will just go back to how it's always been.
Maybe you're two games away from Champions League football, Toby. Two games in the Europa League. Maybe that'll change things.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's a tough one with the Declan Rice situation. That's the situation where he's purely out, in my point of view. He's outgrown West Ham. It's like a Paul Lynch sort of thing. He's got to that stage in his career now where he does need to move on. But as Toby said, it's the Bowens. It's the Ben Johnsons. It's the Suchecks. It's the core of the team. And as David Sullivan has that decision to make, and I think Toby, I'm not sure whether you agree, but if David Sullivan isn't willing to take West Ham to be a top six team, Kuczynski is. Let him come in now. Let him produce that. You know, there's someone there willing to offer more money. And I think that's the thing where Sullivan, it's tempting, is it, where he's saying, oh, why should I increase my budget? We're top six, seven now. Why should I double my budget just to finish the same place? And it's an interesting one, but they have got the man ready to step in, haven't they, Toby, to come in? So it's a huge summer for Weston.
A lot of this is going to depend on Daniel Kretinsky's eagerness to see a return on his, albeit relatively minor, investment. Does he want to take a more hands-on role sooner rather than later? If the answer to that is yes, then we will probably...
But Sullivan, if you get Champions League football, Sullivan's not going anywhere, is he? He wants to be on that TV with Champions League. He's not going anywhere, is he, when you're getting Champions League?
One thing I will say is West Ham will draw the ire of Daniel Kuczynski if they turn down these deals like Klosek. This loan deal isn't available.
And allowing Thomas Suchek, who Kuczynski is understandably a huge fan of, letting him get away.
Yeah. There's got to be a bit of give from both sides. So it will depend, I guess, on how the Europa League semi-final and final goes. We're not getting too ahead of myself yet. Turn it
Don't
round.
Talk about the final, Toby. You're in the semi. Yeah.
Okay. We'll just win on Thursday and then we'll go from there.
let's move on to the Manchester United section with a nice West Ham tie-in. Jesse Lingard, former West Ham loanee, had an excellent spell there last season. His brother and representative after United's 3-0 win over Brentford on Monday night with a nice public statement condemning United for not giving him his send-off that he so desired after 20 years of service to United, even though he was outed as, inadvertently, I think, or maybe accidentally by Paul Scholes, outed as, one of the leaks from the dressing room saying that the dressing room was, in quotation marks, a disaster. There have been suggestions, Graham, in the last few days that Lingard could end up staying and being a part of the Ten Hag project. That's not going to happen, is it?
No, I think of all the players who are still there, he's not one who will. Obviously, Marcus Rashford, I know we've done a story together on that, Scott, haven't we? Marcus Rashford is willing to look at the situation. He's got 2 years left, includes his extension. I think Rashford wants to see which coaches come in, but with Lingard, perhaps, you know, Steve McLaren is going to be a big appointment for United. He's going to be that encompassing figure. He's going to bring the dressing room together. That's what Ten Hag wants, with a bit of history, but who is friends with him is not a separate figure who he's never worked with. So I think the Steve McLaren appointment is crucial here. If Ten Hag went to Jesse tomorrow and said, look, there's a 2-year deal, stay here, you will play, I think but can Ten Hag guarantee Lingard any minutes? Of course he can't. He's got Ralph Nick in his ear saying he's not a good player. So no, I think it's time for Jesse to move on. We'll see with him. But with Marcus, I think that's the intriguing one. You know, we'll see. You know, in Marcus Rashford, in his heart of hearts, doesn't want to leave. And I think every proper United fan, in your heart of hearts, you know, I was never a huge Danny Welbeck fan. Marcus Rashford is a step above. Marcus Rashford is potentially a world-class forward. And I think Ten Hag knows that as well. And I don't think Ten Hag's going to let Rashford go. I think he will give himself at least 12 months to try and get the best out of Rashford and save himself £100 million in the process. Because then if you get Rashford firing, there's some money you can save.
Is there a suggestion that United might be better off cashing in? Again, from the perspective of, you know, Jadon Sancho has moved into that left-wing position after being pursued for 2 years to fill the spot on the right-hand side. There's interest in Anthony from United, as we've reported. Is it more logical to potentially cash in on Rashford and replace him with Anthony so you've got answers on both sides?
Although, for me, I still think Marcus Rashford should be given a chance at centre-forward. I still think he's got everything to play at centre-forward. He, on his days, good touch, good in the air, quick. You don't want Rashford coming off the back of your centre. Imagine if Rashford was playing against Harry Maguire. It'd be a nightmare, wouldn't it? So I think he's got a chance there. I don't see you selling him Will he be included in any potential deals? You know, Barcelona like him, and as we're about to touch on that, I guess. Could he be offered to Barcelona deal? I think he's just too young to be giving up on. What is he, 24 now?
Yeah.
23. He's just too young to be getting... You don't give up on one of your homegrown players like that. You know, again, going back 2 years, Rashford was the anointed one for England. He was playing every game. He was only going forward, and I feel a bit sorry for Rashford because it's United's coaching appointments that have meant he's stagnated, you know. He didn't improve a single bit under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and who I still think is getting off so lightly with this current state of the squad. Ole Gunnar should be standing up and taking a lot of the criticism for this, because the state of this dressing room, the state of that United team, 90% is down to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Notedly, he noted, signed off with tears in his eyes saying it's a great group of lads, didn't he?
Yeah. Shame I don't know how to coach him, but yeah, great group of lads.
Yeah, United have a big mess to sort out this summer. Obviously, we know that there's a lot of players that have uncertain futures, Marcus Rashford being one of them. And as Graham says there, a story from each of us on Marcus Rashford's future on 90 Min, likely going up around the time that this podcast drops as well. So keep an eye out for that. And yes, you did mention Frenkie de Jong there, Graham. Been contrasting reports over the last few days about his future with Barcelona. Now, he's a big earner on the Barcelona books. Potential problem about getting him out. But what's the... Obviously, Erik ten Hag is coming in. He worked with De Jong. He was part of that Ajax team that reached the Champions League semi-final. Romanticized greatly. Obviously, they were within a whisker of actually going to the final against Liverpool, but Tottenham broke their hearts on that day. And then that squad was broken up. You think of De Ligt, you think of Van de Beek, you think of Frenkie de Jong as well. All of these players went to different clubs, but it's not worked out at Barcelona for him. And obviously with Ten Hag coming in at United, there has been perhaps an obvious jump to make that they might, it's not working out for Ten Hag, it's not working out for de Jong at Barcelona. So could there be a reunion on the cards here? And what's the latest on United's interest in the player?
Yeah, there is an interest there. Ten Hag knows the player a lot, and he isn't top of the list. He's not banging his fist on the table, Ten Hag, saying, bring me the head of Frenkie de Jong. It's not that at all. But he knows how to get the best out of him. He was wonderful at Ajax. He really was. The big issue here is the contract he's got. He's been given during the Barca era of the delinquent who were in charge of the finances. He's on 250. He's already on a deal. He's on more now than what Bruno Fernandes' new deal is. That shows you how much Frenkie de Jong is on. It's a very, very difficult situation, but Barca would be willing to let him go. Obviously, United would be paying 250, possibly, if they got him on the reduced terms. I think he is. I think if the situation comes up, from what I'm told, it is something United are looking at. They're willing to, but they realise United have got a lot of these players themselves. They know how hard it is to get rid of him, so they know the Barcelona side of the coin as well. I think there could be player exchanges, possibly a Rashford, but I think more likely a long-term loan with an obligation after a certain amount of games, possibly. You know, something along those lines. I think it's possible. There is an interest there, but I think there's an appreciation at United's end as well. It would be a very difficult one to do. So I think we'll see how keen Ten Hag is on getting it. But I think it's a mouthwatering prospect, because the best we've seen of De Jong is under Erik Ten Hag.
Absolutely. Myself and Graham have been discussing this. I would like it to happen. Let's just say that. I do think he's the type of player that United haven't had.
What about McFred, Scott? You're two lovable rogues in midfield that you adore.
Let's remember that when the trio were at Ajax, De Ligt, De Jong, Van de Beek, De Jong was the one who was talked about as being the best of the trio. Mm-hmm. And Barcelona paid De Jong that amount of money because they thought they were getting a generational talent midfielder. He was being viewed as being that good. And they were signing him not to then look to sell him 4 or 5 years down the road. He was going in to be.
He was a Cruyff. He was going there for 10 years. He was their new Cruyff and new Xavi, wasn't he? And I don't think he's been, he's been okay there. But he wasn't. He's not being signed to be okay, is he? He's, as you say, Toby, he's been signed to be that next Messi, whatever. Yeah, when Messi left, it's okay. We've got Frankie de Jong, the best midfielder in the world. They thought they were signing the best player in the world, really.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. He is about to turn 25 later this month, so he's got plenty of time ahead of him. Barcelona are looking to... Well, we all know the Barcelona financial situation. They've been linked with Carlos Soler from Valencia in recent days, and you can't really see them adding a player like that unless they do get somebody off the books. It does seem like De Jong is one of the players maybe at risk, and we'll have more on Frankie De Jong's future on 90 Min over the course of the next few weeks. I think this one might run a little bit. United might have that problem of not being in the Champions League. Well, they're not going to be in the Champions League. They will have that problem in convincing players to join them if they're not in that competition. But it's a new era, as we've seen over the last few days. There's been some changes upstairs as well, or a little bit above Erik ten Hag or Ralf Rangnick or whoever you want to put in charge, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They've been cycled through managers like nobody's business. Let's move on, because I did want to do a little bit more on De Jong, but maybe we'll leave it for another day. Let's scoot across the city to Manchester City. Toby, and Pep Guardiola, obviously, I think he's out of contract in just over a year. Is that right? I think he's got a decision to make. And Jurgen Klopp has now signed a new deal with Liverpool, as we mentioned. First off, Toby, do you think that that might drive Pep to sign a new deal? And I'll bring Graham in a second as well.
Yes, absolutely. We say that the Man City-Liverpool rivalry isn't the same kind of rivalry that we enjoyed in the early 2000s between United and Arsenal, but that is the Premier League rivalry, and it is going to be the Premier League rivalry for the years to come. And make no mistake about it, it is Klopp against Pep. And Pep will care that Jurgen Klopp has got a better head-to-head record between the two of them. That will hurt him. He will care that Liverpool are this, because Pep said that this City team is the best team that he's ever managed, hasn't he? At some point, he's praised those players in those terms, but yet they just can't shrug off Liverpool. And Liverpool are the team that are on for the quadruple, not Manchester City. And I think it irks Pep that he hasn't been able to shake them off. So the competitive side of Guardiola will be like, yeah, absolutely, I will sign a new contract. And we'll see them going head to head for the next 3 or 4 years. And unfortunately, Florence, I think Erik ten Hag and United will probably still be fading in the background with Chelsea. But why would Pep want to leave at this moment in time unless he was fed up with football completely? It just makes sense for him to prolong his stay.
Is that the case, Graham?
Yeah, I totally agree with Toby. I think, you know, from what I'm being told, I think the City hierarchy are quite happy in some ways with the Klopp signing of his new deal. It's going to give him that inspiration. It's going to give him that... We'll have to see what happens with a title race. But, you know, he loves that chess match, doesn't he? He loves picking his wits against Klopp. I think because Klopp is that slightly different figure, you know, I wonder in the next few years we might get a bit of winding each other up a bit more. We'd like to see that, I'm sure, from our point of view. We'd like to be a bit more grind between the two of them. But, yeah, I think, yeah, so what way is Pep going to go? He does like to... You know, he took a sabbatical before. We believe that that may come again in America at some point. But, you know, that's not going anywhere. New York City is always there for him. I imagine he may look ahead to the World Cup in America and think... I think a lot of managers are probably looking ahead to that World Cup and thinking, in 3 years, I'll take an international job and a lovely World Cup in North America. What better way? And I think we might see Pep do that. But in the meantime, I think he's got a good 3 years of City life ahead of him. And, yeah, I'd be... at this point, very surprised if he doesn't extend by at least another couple of years and have this battle with Klopp. Obviously, if he wins the Champions League this season, as his full, he gets that chip off his shoulder, will he then think differently? Possibly. But no, I think he'll sign some sort of extension.
Yeah, you'd make it quite likely, wouldn't you? I don't think there's any sign yet of this head-to-head. I always hesitate to call it a rivalry because I'm sorry, but there's no needle in it. I don't know what you guys think. Maybe we'll round off at this in this
it's
place.
It's a different kind of rivalry. It's just
there's no needle, right? Toby, like, how much drama can you get out of two teams who win every game? I'm sorry, it's not drama.
It can be, but I think with Pep as well, he's got he's likely got Haaland coming in, Julian Alvarez. I think he'll be so excited and those two players come in. We forget about Julian Alvarez, by the way. If you're not aware of his form of late, don't you look, Scott, but Toby, have a look at Julian Alvarez's recent form. It's frightening. He's right. Averaging a goal a game, and it's going to be amazing. But I think with these players coming in, maybe Declan Rice, you know, I think Pep's got a bit between his teeth. He was a bit down a couple of years ago, wasn't he? But then they brought the new assistant, and I think City did a great job there. They rejuvenated the backroom staff. This is exactly what Alex Ferguson did. You know, when Arteta left, I thought, oh no. But that's had the exact effect they wanted. It's really got him going again in a few different ideas. Of Ramsey told the players think he's been a different character in the last 18 months, which is what you got to do.
The difference, Florence, a rivalry is when two teams want to kick lumps out of each other. They fiercely dislike each other and they go into the game and there's passion. Man City and Liverpool, they are each other's competition. That's it. And the word rivalry has just been placed in there because they're neck and neck in the title race. It doesn't make it a rivalry. It just makes them two very good teams who win all the time and are in competition with themselves and nobody else. But that's something Pep will want to come out on top of. So for me, he will want to stay until he's buried Jurgen Klopp once, until he's buried him again, and then a third time round, and then he'll think, yep, I got the best of that, and then he can sail off into the New York sunset in a few years' time, and he can wind down his career on his terms.
Yes, indeed. The greatest rivalry in Premier League history has no signs of stopping at the moment, according to Jamie Carragher. He set off a debate there, didn't he, a few weeks ago? But yes, anyway, we'll see how that plays out. But I think most people would now expect.
And don't forget, resigns. Toby, don't forget that Newcastle angle, which within 18 months will be there as well. So we've got another huge club on the horizon ready to challenge as well, which I think will intrigue them both.
We'll see. Newcastle are going to do some business. I'm sure Graham will be kept busy with Newcastle over the next 2-3 years, perhaps longer. This summer especially, you suspect there's going to be a lot of turnover in that squad too.
10 years, I think it'll be more 10 years, unfortunately, Scott, from my Middlesbrough point of view. But hey, they'll keep me busy for sure.
They will indeed. Please subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and follow us on Twitter too. @_ScottSaunders for me, @GrahamBailey for Graham, and @Toby_Cudworth. We are on all of the usual podcast outlets, you know, Spotify, not Acast.
No.
Sorry, Graham. Apple.
I'm on Google, but it's just not as good. Oh, it's just not as good as the whole community who were devastated. It's horrible. It's okay, Google, but it's not the same. It's really
give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform as well, if there is one to be done. And we will see you in around a week's time for some more transfer chat on Talking Transfers from 90min.com. Thanks very much, guys. And thank you very much for listening.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.